Hello, movie lovers, and welcome to the show. And tonight, we're going to be reviewing Superman 3. I have my good friend Tamika here with me to talk about this Richard Pryor hacker of a movie, because that's what Richard Pryor was. But yeah, this is also another movie that I wasn't born yet or anything, because it's in 1980. So yeah, I was born 5 years later, so I'm negative five. So let's go ahead. Let's talk about Superman 3. And hey, Tamika.
Hey, what's going on?
Nothing much. How are you? Hey. Wait until you get to the fourth one. The fourth one is, you're going to be wondering if part three is better than part four.
Oh, geez. That's terrible.
So I have a question for you, though. Like, okay, did this, right. We'll get it. Let's talk about the nostalgia of this first, and then we'll get into the scene by scene breakdown.
Okay.
Because I want to know where it went downhill for you, or if it was like the whole entire movie that went downhill for you. But yeah. So I remember seeing this as a kid for the very first time. I loved him. I loved Richard Pryor in I See No Evil, Hear No Evil, Stir Crazy. The list just goes on with his filmography and stuff like that when it comes down to his comedies. So seeing him in this as a kid, it didn't really fit or jive, but I went along with the story because I love Superman. I love Christopher Reeve still as Superman. So I was embodied with Superman and stuff like that. So, and also, too, I remember that I don't know if you remember this, Tamika, but back in the 80s, we had a Superman video game or the arcade in the Pizza Hut. At least we did. Did you?
I just keep remembering Mortal Kombat, so I don't know.
Okay. So, anyways, in 1988, they actually had a Superman arcade video game. So, what I was thinking whenever those rich people were actually doing that whole entire thing with the rockets and stuff, it reminded me of that video game, and I wanted to go over to Pizza Hut to play that game. Because I just love the arcade game. But as far as nostalgia goes and everything, I'm going to give this at least 7.5 out of 10 for nostalgia. I like it, but I don't love it like the other two movies.
Interesting. Okay.
Because, yeah, I ended up watching it. It's not the most quotable movie. You don't even see Lois in the whole entire movie either, so you don't have her in there. It's mostly primarily focused on Lana and Clark's relationship in the Smallville and going through the stuff in Smallville versus it being Metropolis. So it's a very different in tone movie overall. But what do you think about it nostalgically?
I can't speak on it.
Okay, so you're an NA. Okay, that's fine. That's cool.
Yeah, I think the problem is I was getting really into Batman more. And then probably Superman. Well, this came out before I was born, too. But, I mean, you know, he was still around. Superman was. But I think I was more driven into Batman.
Right. This came out in 83. So I was born 2 years later. So.
I was born 1 year later. But still, I didn't know anything about it. So I'm an NA. That's what I'm saying.
Okay. That's cool. Now that we talked about this movie nostalgically. Now we're going to go ahead, give you the modern day rating. In order to do that, we have to do this scene by scene. So let's go on ahead. Let's talk about Superman 3. Faster than a speeding bullet, more confusing than a tax form, and able to find himself in a junkyard while looking like he needs a drink. That's right, folks. This ain't your daddy's Superman. This is Superman 3. The only superhero film bold enough to say, what if Superman got drunk, went rogue, and Richard Pryor built the weather machine? And yes, Richard Pryor is in this movie because when you think of hacking computers and defending Kryptonians, you think stand-up comedy. Tonight, we dive headfirst into flying robot ladies, evil corporate schemes, and the most awkwardly placed ski slope in movie history. Buckle up, Cape Wearers. Episode has more plot twists than a soap opera and more what-the-fuck moments than a Nicolas Cage film festival. This is your Superman 3 review, and no, we didn't dream this movie. It actually happened. With scene one, August Gus Gorman is an unemployed man looking for a job when told that he is no longer eligible for unemployment benefits. He enrolls in a school for information technology. Gorman discovers that he has a talent and a natural born knack for computer programming. After graduating, Gorman gets an entry-level job as a data entry clerk at Websco, aka Webster Industries. So the very beginning of this is very different as well, because here's the thing, when we watch a Superman movie, right? Mm-hmm. We always get the Superman theme, we always get Superman saving somebody, because if you remember, we ended up seeing Superman 2, and we have a montage of the first film of where Clark was and where he begins in Superman 2. And this one, we don't even get that. We just get a bunch of technology stuff that's going haywire. We have bombs on the streets and stuff like that. It was very different. It felt very weird seeing it like that. We only get to see Superman one time do something because the guy's stuck in his car because of a robbery.
Yeah.
That's been taking place, but he doesn't go after the robbers. He's going after the guy. He ends up saving the guy from drowning, and people are over there high-fiving him and shaking hands with him. And he also takes a picture of himself in the photo booth. But what about the robbers? but it's very different because we don't even get to see that. And not only that, but there's not even the John Williams score doesn't even pop up as much in this one as it did in the other two films.
So the unemployment thing, well, I guess this one maybe was seemed more grounded in reality a bit. Like, you get away from the Clark, I guess. Yeah, you get away from, like, the usual Superman and Clark Kent and, like, Metropolis and newspaper, and you get more into the street level of things. I thought the beginning was, after Richard Pryor and unemployment, that was real, because I've been in unemployment before, so I felt very, I was like, oh my God, I feel that, man. But the only part that was Looney Tunes for me was just when the guy was looking at the girl walking, and then he runs into something, and then it causes this Murphy's Law, where everything just starts tumbling. Like, he runs into something, the girl gets distracted, and then she runs into the hot dog cart, which pushes here, and then some blind man loses his dog, and then he thinks this hot dog cart is something, and then here and there, everything just falls apart, and I was like, what? And like you were saying with the robbers, I was like, oh my God, there's robbers. And then Superman, I almost forgot where he was. He was walking down the street as Clark, and I thought he was just some regular person until he changed into the photo booth as Superman to save this guy that was drowning in his car, which I don't know what the laws of physics are. How did the water get in the man's car?
It was from the fire hydrant, I believe.
I just never seen like that before in my life. I was like, what? This man is drowning in his car and he's on the street.
It's a Final Destination shit. That's all I guess.
That's exactly what it is. Okay. Yes, it was the beginning of Superman 3 was Final Destination.
Really? That's- if you think about it in that kind of context, it is kind of like Final Destination. You have all this stuff going awry. You have the old blind man, like you said, walking. Yeah. You also have Clark, who accidentally hits the other guy in the face with a pie because he's actually trying to prevent the pie from hitting the woman in the face, which is also the same woman that we see later on that's actually the villain of this movie.
Yes.
So you have that kind of thing, like strangers on the streets kind of thing.
Yes.
Of like, they don't cross paths until like later on, which I think is kind of interesting, is foreshadowing it, but at the same time it's like, okay, it's just the beginning of the movie.
What did it foreshadow?
Foreshadowing them into Clark later, well, Superman later on running into her.
Oh, okay. That whole point was lost on me. It just felt like a whole different movie. That's why I was
it
telling
does.
You.
I mean, this
I
movie
was telling you off air. Yeah. It felt like Looney Tunes with all the stuff happening, and then once the movie progresses, it turns dark, and I was like, "This is a huge shift." I was not prepared for.
I was. I knew exactly what I was getting.
No, I was not prepared. I was expecting Looney Tunes all the way through.
The whole thing with August and August Gus, played by Richard Pryor, you know, he's up in there, the unemployment line, and the woman's like, look, you've been let go from this place and this place and this place. You were a cook for like 26 minutes. That's like the short, that's a record, 26 it minutes. That's
a record.
He goes, what's going on here? He goes, well, I have too many people ask me, well, do you want onions on that? Do you not want onions on that? Do you want mustard on that? Do you not want mustard on that? And he just had enough of it, so he walked out. So, yeah. And then the woman's like, well, there's nothing else that we can do. We have other jobs that we've hired you. You were let go from those jobs. And she, and then finally, Gus goes, oh, I don't know why Gus is still there after she let him go. But he's still there in the very back of the line with this other guy, and he winds up finding the number to the computer, school for the computer programming, and on the back of the cigarettes. So he goes there, and you have this one woman that's actually asking a bunch of questions. Well, what happens if this computer does this thing and everything? And then the guy's like, the computer's not going to do that. And then you also have this other thing that happens where it's about with hot coffee, where you say, your coffee's ready. So it's kind of foreshadowing our day, our years in the present now. So it's kind of like ahead of its time with computer hacking and stuff like that. And they even mention it later on. So it's very foreshadowing of what's happening in the world today with computers and hackers.
I can see that now that you put it that way. Yeah. I mean, just, I actually wish all dogs were like what Gus found out on the back of that matchbox.
Right.
Where it was like, make easy money, become a computer programmer. I wish that I could find a job. Yeah, it's so easy to become a computer programmer, you know, like make fast money, do customer service. I mean, they just
Even see Gus graduate from the school or anything. He just automatically gets a job.
Yeah, I'm like, what is this? Okay. But yeah, seeing all those computers, it brought back nostalgic memories of how our computers used to look like.
Right.
But now we got computers on our phones, so it's like,
it's totally different. Yeah. Like this is actually how I was brought up on computers in lower elementary with all that old technology.
Yeah, even when word processing was introduced, people thought it was the end of the world. You know, right. Like, oh God, it's gonna replace us.
Computer and even processing. The internet. At that point, I remember when the internet was introduced to us.
Yeah, crazy times for elder millennials.
But while you have that going on, you have Clark going into the office across the street. And now we get Lois and we have Perry White back again. And Clark's all giddy. He's like, Mr. Perry, Mr. White, what do you think about me going back to my high school doing this this subject? I think it'd be a very interesting thing where I get to go back to my school and now I'm working for this big, huge newspaper. And I get to show everyone who I am. I think it'll be a very good thing. It's kind of like, you know, you go from a zero to a hero kind of thing. Like I used to be at the towel boy. Now I'm actually somebody. And Perry's like, yeah, that sounds like a good idea. And then next thing you know, you see Lois come in. Thank you, Perry. You know, Clark's thinking it's all about him still. And instead, she's going off to do another report somewhere else.
Yeah. Yeah, I saw that. It was interesting from the last movie seeing where they both left off at. And then him having to pretend like he didn't just wipe her memory and they weren't really like in love. That was kind of awkward. It's like he's working with his ex, but she doesn't remember him. And then she's like, oh, I'm going on vacation. And look at my bikini. He's like, oh, going on vacation, huh? I thought he was going to ask with who.
Me too. Who are you going with?
Acting like a jealous ex. It's like, oh, going on vacation alone in that bikini. I was like, oh God.
Clark, I'm gonna do a report. Oh, okay.
Okay,
that's cool.
What is going on?
Mr. White, what do you think about my
The more I look at these movies, the more human I see Superman becoming through Clark.
Me too. But I do like how Perry's like, I don't even care about this report that you want to do, Clark. Just go. Just do whatever you want to do.
Yeah. And it's awkward. I mean, like, Superman is going to his high school reunion.
Right.
Can you imagine it? Oh, what have you been up to? I'm Superman.
Man. Ooh, I work for the Metropolis newspaper now.
I saved the world. What did you do?
I'm a security guard.
I'm a security guard. But 20 bucks an hour.
Nowhere. Ooh. Oh, you're just special, Weschel. But no, seriously, though.
Terrible.
Then you also have this other thing with the machine with the balls and everything, too.
Oh, yeah.
Trying to choose a winner for somebody else because we're going to use machines to basically tell us who we're going to pick as a winner. So that's something different that haven't. So in those years, it was actually something new and different.
I'm so glad you explained that because I was lost. I was like, what is with the
ball? It was like watching bingo, right? It was like doing like a bingo hall.
Just doing like today's lottery specials. Today's number is. That's what I thought he was doing. I was like,
but that's what I thought of. It was just him trying to pick a winner for a contest. So that's what I was looking at it.
I was like, what is he picking lottery numbers? Today's number is 2, and then right? It's 3.
What else do we have for him? Well, we have the lucky number 7.
A brand new car. Oh, that's what I thought was going on. I was like, this man picking lottery numbers and working.
Right? Jeez. He's doing too much for a newspaper.
He got to take on 2 jobs now. That's the economy.
Okay, so now we have.
Okay.
Now it goes back to Gorman. He gets an entry level job as a data entry clerk at Websco, aka Webster Industries.
Okay.
Dissatisfied with the low amount of money, like we all are, he receives for his week's pay. He embezzles $85,000 from his new employer's payroll through hacking the company accounts and having the fraction of the cents left over diverted to him, a process known as salami slicing. Gorman is brought to the attention of the CEO, Ross Webster. Webster is a billionaire obsessed with the potential of computers to aid him in the schemes rule the world financially. So now we have where Gus is like, look, I'm dissatisfied with the amount of money I made. Mm-hmm. Then you also have this coworker that's telling him, look, basically, we have some cents that are actually taken out of our checks and stuff, and it's just gone. It's in the data. Basically, if you think about it, it's just lost in the system in the eco somewhere.
Mm-hmm.
And he goes, well, what about those cents? He goes, well, we don't really need them. We're not missing them, so it doesn't really matter. Well, Gus goes on ahead, decides he doesn't like that, and he writes himself a nice check.
I just had a hard time believing Richard Pryor's a computer geek.
That's what I wanted to ask you, was like, did you find him believable?
No, not that he couldn't be one. It's just
this is life changing. You have someone of color finally that's able to get a white person job.
No, it's not that. Okay, it's not that. It's just that Richard Pryor is so cool. It's like he oozes coolness and machismo that I can't believe him in this geeky role as a computer programmer. That's what I had a hard time believing because he's like, you know, super cool. It seemed like it could have went to like.
Because even when he's in school, right? He's like, how to do that? I don't know.
Yeah. It just seemed like it could have went to an actor that was geeky, that knew how to play geek well. That's it. He just didn't
Urkel.
Know it. Yeah. It was, you know, something like that. You know how Christopher Reeves can trick me into thinking that he's Clark by being goofy and geeky.
Okay,
but he still looked, it's like the nuances weren't there. And he was just still Richard Pryor.
So I gotcha. I get what you're saying. Like someone's nerdy, but also has confidence too, just as Superman has, when Clark doesn't have the glasses, he has confidence. where Richard Pryor should have been, Gus should have been on that nerdy level. And then when he talks to the actual owners of that building, he should have had be the confident guy of like, hey, look, I can then get you what you want, but I want X, Y, and Z.
Yeah, but, you know, like, he was the same throughout. You know, it was just like Richard Pryor throughout. You know, like if you saw
layers to him.
If you saw the previous movies, it's like, oh, it's just Richard Pryor being Richard Pryor. You know, and like Christopher Reeves can be like, oh, Lois Horne. And he's like, Lois, you know. Like, I just kind of illustrate it for you.
Right. I got you. I get what you're saying. But you know what, though? If this is made in modern times, it'll be a white dude with a Mountain Dew in his hand or an energy drink listening to new old metal.
No.
Like Korn or Limp Bizkit or something.
Okay.
That would be what Superman 3 would be like today. You know, like a Monster energy drink, high octane music and stuff. That's what Gus would be.
Gus would be Mark Zuckerberg.
I can see that, Zuckerberg.
Taking over the world.
But, you know, I don't think that Gus would have gotten caught if he didn't. I feel like this. If you didn't like the way your check was, and if you know your coworkers don't like the way they're getting paid, go on ahead and act like, you know, that the system, there was like a glitch in the system where everybody gets some portion of it, not just you. Otherwise, there's going to be red flags. If you're a hacker, you know that. If you're that smart, you're supposed to know that. And no, he comes up in a sports car. A red sports car that sticks out like a sore thumb. So, you know, Gus is supposed to be this big, huge hacker guy, and he's just being dumb.
Yeah, also, he got greedy. He took too much too soon. Like, you know, take it over time. But I felt him, though, when he was explaining his check. Because I was supposed to get, what, $220 or something, and he got, like, $140, one something. And he's like, what is this? And they're like, well, you got Social Security tax, you got this tax, you got it. He's like, oh, all these taxes coming out of my check. And I was like, yeah, Gus, all your taxes coming out of my check. Oh, man.
Whenever he starts talking about the salami thing of, you know, this coworker's like, well, where does this all go? Well, it just goes out into the ether. We don't know where it goes. And if it's not there, why miss it? Come to find out that if it's floating around somewhere, you have to know that that's a lot of damn money that you're missing.
Yeah, this movie is a precursor to everything we're going through now.
Agreed. Mm-hmm. And, okay, now my other question is this, okay? So now we're introduced to Ross Whipster. This is not Lex Luthor. This is just a business tycoon guy that Gus stole from, and now he figures out that he can use Gus in a way to get what he wants. While Gus is also going to try, okay, you know what, man? Look, I'm someone of color, so guess what? I'm going to use you as you're using me. So clearly you have the money to do what you're doing. So why not try to mooch off of you? That's how I took it with Gus, was like, okay, yeah, I stole about $80,000 from you, but you can afford it. So why not take whatever else you have?
Yeah, you saw it better than I do. I just saw Gus is like, oh, thank God I'm not going to jail. I'll do whatever you want.
That too. I could see him saying, thank God I'm not going to go to jail.
Yeah.
But I also see him, like, once he starts negotiating, you know, he gets to keep the money. And also, too, he gets to be free, but also help him. And you see the rotating bar that he has, that this businessman has, and everything. He's not going to miss nothing. Mm-mm. He's embezzling money himself from his own company, probably.
Yeah, pretty much.
And so he gets Gus to do something with Columbia. Remember?
That was the most ridiculous thing I ever seen. Okay, sorry. Go ahead.
But yeah, he schemes him to rule the world financially, joined by his Buffy sister and right-hand woman Vera, and his psychic nutritionist and mistress, L'Oreal Ambrosa.
Her name?
I just thought it was weird. You have a psychic who's actually a nutritionist that's going to be doing conning with you, and you have your sister Vera, who's just a selfish image of who you are,
yeah,
as well.
Mm-hmm. Mm-hmm.
So you have, and then she's supposed to be the dim-witted one. The nutritionist is supposed to be the dim-witted one, but she actually turns out to be the smart one.
Yeah, she was playing it down, and I thought she's just like the previous lady. She's just playing a dumb sidekick woman role, and later on in the movie, she's reading and talking about whatever. And I'm like, what? And then I'm jumping ahead, but
no, you're good.
Yeah, we'll get to that part. Okay.
Because right now we're actually on the part now where Jimmy Olsen and Clark are going to Smallville.
Yeah.
And their bus is stopped by a police barricade. And let me just tell you this. The police officer for this really made me mad. He was like Captain Obvious the whole entire time. You know what I'm talking about, right?
Wait a minute. Which part? What is
he? Where, okay, they stopped the bus, right?
Yeah.
And he's like, well, there's a chemical plant. They have chemicals in it. It can explode. No shit. That's what happens. You're right. That's exactly what happens, buddy.
You're terrible.
Then there's actually this other thing that he says, too. Let me see.
Oh, my God.
And then he's like, because there's a chemical plant, and they have, like, chemicals. It's just... Bob is like, fire is spreading like wildfire. Ha ha. Dad jokes. Yeah, that's what happens when a fire happens.
These
it's going to spread. No shit, Sherlock.
They small town people, Jones. They describe
But they don't even make it to Smallville yet. That's not even Smallville.
This on the way
like
to
a little rural area before we get to Smallville.
Okay, now you see how different Metropolis is from these places.
I was waiting for Smokey the fucking Bandit to come in there and everything and talk about forest fires at this point.
Can you prevent forest fires? Can you?
It's spreading like wildfire. Okay.
My other question is, like, when Clark and Jimmy got off the bus and they're stooping down by the cop car, and then there's a cop standing adjacent from them. He's like looking at them, and then he's like looking at something else. I'm like, you see them? They're like right there. What are you doing? He's like, oh, shoot. No one thought to look at them yet. It wasn't in the script. What?
I'm not supposed to let anyone in. I'm not supposed to let anyone in this part. You're doing a good job. I'm just going to tell you this right now.
And then he does it a second time. He's like, Clark, cause a distraction. And the cop's like, you see them.
Jimmy does.
How did you go over there and say, what are you guys doing about this car? Oh my gosh. This is why we need better extras.
Yeah. But then we have Clark changes to Superman and saves the trapped employees. There is no one.
Stop. Pause. What? Can we talk about how he changed into Superman?
Yeah, go ahead. I'll let you break that part.
No, you do it.
No, you do it.
No, he didn't have a photo booth, so he just got in the cop car, changed right quick, and then got out. And I'm like, what the hell? And the cop like, did something happen?
He's like, well, it's just a good time to do this now.
I mean, I can see that he didn't have his photo booth. He had nowhere else to change.
He didn't have no telephone booth.
No. So it's like, I just get in this cop car and change.
Right? Doot to doot. That's it.
Go ahead. I'm sorry.
But yeah, then you have where he saves the trapped employees. There is one engineer who actually remains in the building. Burning building, mm-hmm. as he must monitor the canisters of Bletric acid and warned Superman that when the canisters are superheated, they will produce acid clouds that will cause destruction far worse than the fire. Superman flies to a nearby lake 5 miles away and encrusts it with the freeze breath, then flies the ice over the chemical plant just as the acid is in danger of reaching critical mass. Saving the day, however, Jimmy is injured with a broken leg while attempting to get photos of the disaster.
Yeah, that man dedicated. But he got good shots, though, because when he was taking those pictures, I was like, oh, that's a good shot. Mm, that's good. That's a good one, too. And I was like, oh, crap, you're going to die.
And then here comes the cop. He goes, you got to get down from there right now.
Huh?
Fire's whoa. And then they find out, then the water hose runs out of water from the fire department. And so they're like, well, where's the, we don't know what to do now. Superman's like, well, where's the nearest water? The lake is this, that way, 5 miles out. So he flies over there, freezes the lake, picks up the parts of the water, and then drops it on there. I feel like this whole entire part of the movie is nothing but a science breakdown if you want to learn something in biology.
Yeah, that's a good way to put it. Yeah, a Looney Tunes science experiment. This is what this movie is about. And then
he tells,
like, oh, go ahead. Sorry.
No. Go on ahead.
No, I was just going to say everybody's so casual. Like when he first comes down and the fire chief, he's like, oh, it's you, Superman. Hi. Like, oh, wait, what is that, Bob from the water?
He shows up here all the time, right? It's just another, it's a Tuesday.
Yeah. He's just like, oh, it's you, Superman. Hi, how can I help? I was like, wait a minute, Superman. You know, it's like, like everybody in Metropolis goes, Superman.
Not him. These people clearly know who he is. He travels there all the time for tacos, or probably on Tuesday. You know?
It's you. Hi, Superman.
Hi, like, how are you?
I will still be like,
great to see you again.
It's you. Oh, no.
But yeah, but Jimmy, then he winds up looking at Jimmy and goes, oh, you broke your amphibia. And so he already goes on ahead and tells them what's going on, but the EMTs are not going to say what he broke. They're just going to bring him over to the hospital and that's it. But here's the thing. This is how dedicated Clark was for this story. He doesn't go over there to check on Jimmy. Mm-mm. He just goes straight over to his high school.
Well, yeah, because he knew, oh, he just, you know, broke something. You'll be fine. I got to go. But you know,
but back how in those days, though, you stay in the hospital for a broken leg. Even when you're burnt, it seems like that he was also burning. Superman just walks through the flames like nothing even happened.
True. True. But we also see how Superman is stretched thin. You know, he's like, I don't have the motherfucking time to go see you and your broken leg, and I know it's going to heal in a day or two. I got to get to this high school reunion to see Lana, damn it.
Right?
I need to show them that I'm Superman. I made something of myself.
So now we are now in Smallville.
Yes.
Clark is reunited with the childhood friend Lana Lang. Lana is divorced with a young son named Ricky. Over the next few days, Clark and Lana begin to share affection for one another, just like they did in the first movie for 5 seconds. Through Lana's former boyfriend, Brad, Clark's childhood bully and now an alcoholic security guard, is still eyeing for her attention. While that's happening too, you also have Gus and them trying to figure out where to actually go for this computer that they want him to do. Because remember, he was supposed to get false weather reports and stuff like that by hacking the satellite. So happens to be it's actually in Smallville where Brad is the security guard at. But we'll get to that in a few minutes.
It just happened to be in Smallville.
Right. Where the Clark is. But this whole entire thing with Lana and Clark, I really like. I like this dynamic between the two of them. They're slow dancing. They're enjoying their high school reunion. And Brad is this one guy that, you know, at every class reunion, Tamika, he's that guy that never left that small town. He's also that star quarterback. That's all he's going to talk about for the rest of his life is like, remember that time when I scored that winning touchdown? You remember that?
No.
That was some good times, right? Mm-hmm. That was good.
Yeah, 30 years.
I won that homecoming trophy, you know, and also went to the dance.
Yeah.
This is going to be the same guy over and over again in every high school reunion.
Yeah, that's why I didn't go to mine.
Me too. I went to Buffalo Wild Wings instead with one of my friends.
Oh, but that's cool. Yeah, but I mean, this gives hope for kids who are in high school now. They're like, well, and you know, in 20, 30 years, you're just going to be a drunk alcoholic. That's going to be a security guard that's still here, and I'm just going to be, you know, building computers.
And yeah, pretty much.
In California. And
Clark is going to be doing his newspaper, writing stories about him being an alcoholic.
Yeah, or you could say, I'm just going to be Superman. And he's just gonna be here, and I can fly up to the sun, and he's an alcoholic security guard.
But yeah, but I do like the stuff with Lana and Clark. Brad is just a douchebag ball bag. You have him.
You came up with a new one, douchebag.
I said douchebag ball bag.
I like the one douchebag.
Douchebag. I like that too.
Douchebag.
But then you have Brad, who wants to try and teach Ricky how to bowl.
Yeah.
And then Clark is like, look, he's already going to be embarrassed enough and stuff with you trying to tell him what to do in front of his classmates and stuff. He goes, well, Clark, if you know so much, why don't you go help him? So Clark does. And I'll be honest with you, Ricky does suck at bowling, but you didn't have to be mean to the kid like that.
Yes. Yeah. He you know, he told him you just bowl the way you bowl, and in some kind of way Clark's allergies
was at, yeah, because Clark's, remember, it was Superman. The dust.
Yeah. Oh my god, am I Supergirl? I have allergies to the dust.
And no one even questions how Ricky bowled that perfect strike with destroying the bowling pins.
That was beyond a strike, John. He destroyed those pins. I don't even know what that was anymore.
I'm surprised it didn't destroy the wall behind the pins, to be honest with you.
All I know is that Superman always needs a Claritin because he's going to destroy some stuff.
But I promise you this. Ricky probably has some friends after that. I would be impressed.
I would be his friend.
Me too. Now we have, meanwhile, Webster schemes to monopolize the world's coffee corpse supply, infiltrating by Columbia's refusal to do business with him. He orders Gorman to command an American weather satellite named Vulcan to create a hurricane to decimate the coffee corp. Gorman travels to Smallville and sneaks into a local business office after hours, bribing Brad with liquor, and waits until he passes out. Gorman then carries out his boss's plan.
The whole thing was crazy. Just Richard Pryor.
He comes off the bus.
Yeah.
And just automatically just goes over to this building. And he's the only security person in this big, huge building. Brad is. He goes, how you doing, partner? Look, I gotta set up this whole entire bar right here. I didn't mean to make all this liquor fall out. I looked at all his suitcases with all this alcoholic drinks. I'm like, damn, this is actually pretty cool. I would like to actually carry that.
Yeah.
Like this little mini bar in the suitcase. But you know, Southern person like Brad, he's like, well, son, let me see what else you got over there. Come on in.
Yeah, that's a deep, deep sound.
Yeah, and so they're over there drinking. He decides to pour Brad some more vodka. He goes, man, you're holding your vodka pretty well. You're holding your drinks pretty well. Yeah, I never pass out. I see. You never pass out, huh? All of a sudden, Brad goes backwards and passes out. And then come to find out, you need two people to operate this big, huge system.
Yeah. I mean, I didn't think Gus was drunk. until he start pressing all the buttons and causing more chaos. You know, like the funny part, one of the funny chaotic things he did was he increased everybody's bill. Like there was a bill to Bloomingdale's and the man got the bill and it was, I forgot how much it was.
About $719,000 or something.
Yeah. And then his wife's like, oh, what's that? And he's like, shove an orange in her face. Like, you stupid bitch. You spent $7,000.
She gets a little postcard, right? She's, oh. And then.
I would shove an orange in her face too. How do you spend $79,000 at Bloomingdale's? What's wrong with you? And then the traffic light, like the animation with the traffic light, like the stop and the go mm-hmm. guy were fighting each other. The animate, I was like, what in the world is going on?
I felt like that was okay. I'm gonna go a little deep.
Okay, let's go.
I felt like that would be like us, like as if the government's trying to control the narrative of us fighting and being separated, and therefore you have this chaos of the traffic mm-hmm. causing more chaos. That's just me going deep on something that's stupid.
I go even deeper. It is scary how computers or machines can control anything, like right. traffic or I mean that could really happen. Like our bills could just increase. You know, like you're right. used to a bill being like $100 or something, but imagine getting a bill from wherever and it's like $79,000. You're like, I know I did not spend $79,000. My credit right. card bill is expensive. Like it's just anything can get manipulated. That's the scary thing.
Exactly. Like I said, this is actually something that was different from the 80s, and I could see why it got, you know, I could see why this movie wasn't that successful in a sense because of that, probably, aside from, you know, Richard Pryor being in the movie and stuff like that. But I could see why the technology aspect of it might be over some people's heads yeah. because of the fact that it was so ahead of its time, because now everything is operated through Wi-Fi. We have farms that's operated through Wi-Fi. Mm. Our water systems is through Wi-Fi and internet access and stuff.
Yeah. Yes. And there are companies, or sometimes I even worry about my own light company, or your bill like suddenly increases. And you're like, I know I didn't have my lights on that long. Right. I was like, oh.
Exactly. So, you know. And, you know, and then Webster's like, the whole reason why Gus is over there so the way Gus can't be traced or anything. So he has to go somewhere where this big mega computer is. But I like how at first Richard is trying to figure out how he's going to operate this big computer. Mm-hmm. Because first he uses his hand and then he does like this. Okay, this is not going to work. Then he takes his foot with the key trying to insert it. That's not going to work. Mm-hmm. So he has to use Brad, pick mm-hmm. him up, and then put him on the chair and then make him insert the card like Weekend at Bernie's.
Yes, which was even more ridiculous because I don't even know if that can actually work. He like tied a string to his wrist and he's like, okay, what? Can it actually work?
It has to be like, inserted at the same time. Yeah, so you have to really go about doing it correctly at one time.
Yeah, you need like two people actually that. I mean, it's actually smart, you know, that they designed it where two people have to insert a key in at the same time. That keeps it from being hacked. But to tie a string around somebody that passed out and then have him hold a key and then pull the string and then he automatically inserts it. The laws of physics are just beyond this movie. This movie is like,
there's no physics with
physics. Who?
Well, also, too, to make it like, I want a little side story about what happens to Brad after this when he wakes up and then he gets fired from his job because he let this guy in. But what's to say that Richard of Gore, you know, his character, what happens if he deleted him coming into the building, deleted all the security footage, and it's just him getting his ass drunk, Brad, and he's just let go and he's making up this bogus story?
Yes, that is good. That would have been interesting to see what happened to him. Like, he put him back at the table and then spread all the bottles around and he just got drunk? Or
no, what I think that happened is he probably got his ass drunk and passed out at that big computer. But at the same time, though, you still would need two people and that still wouldn't make sense. But yeah, he probably put him back over to that table where they are because they have that big, huge cowboy hat.
Dang, that's messed up.
It looks like Semi Sam from Looney Tunes.
I was going to say I would be nice and clean up and just leave him on the floor where he's like, wake up on the floor. He's like, what happened? But it's Brad. So yeah, I would probably just leave him at the computer, passed out. And then somebody's like, what are you doing?
And then remember, well, after he hacks the satellite and everything, we have that whole entire chaotic storms are happening because the meteorologists are also given the wrong information off their doppler radars and stuff. And then you have that couple that won the trip.
It connects.
Yeah. Did you remember that or no?
I did remember it.
Because remember, they won that trip because Perry and them drew their number.
Oh, I was like, what are white people doing in Colombia scoring some dope?
Now I have an image of Johnny Depp and Blow when these people just happen to be in Colombia.
And it's always the same scene. There's a donkey. That's a farm. Colombia has more than donkeys.
And this clay, hold on. It's also this clay church building too, with no electricity, and someone's getting married.
The same scene in every movie that's about Colombia. It's a donkey just randomly walking.
But yeah.
Yeah, that,
and then,
that weather scene didn't make any sense, John.
It didn't. It was like as if like the satellites can control the weather, you know, but I blame it on the weather people misguided. What do you think?
Yet. They can't control it yet. They're working on it.
True. This is not the Truman Show. It's not the Truman Show.
AI working on controlling the weather. So okay. I think that's going to be very scary if that can happen. They're taking all our business, destroying our coffee fields, press a button, whoosh, wipe the competition out. Now we're in control of the coffee. America.
Exactly. We are the coffee. Yeah. But yeah, now we have Webster. He schemes, is third when Superman neutralizes the tornado and saves the harvest. Webster then orders Gorman to use his computer knowledge to create kryptonite. Remembering Lois Lane's Daily Planet interview with Superman years ago, during which Superman identified it as his only weakness, Gorman uses the computer to order the Vulcan satellite to locate Krypton's debris in outer space. But after the computer fails to analyze an unknown element in kryptonite, making it up only 1% of the meteor rock, he improvises by replacing the unidentified element with tar, guard, from a pack of Camel cigarettes that he smokes on a daily basis. So that's basically his great value kryptonite.
I'm glad you said that.
What great value kryptonite?
Yeah, because when he handed, I don't know, go ahead. But when he, you know, when Jimmy was like, oh my God, come to my birthday party, the little boy. And right. he came to birthday party and he was like, oh my God, this is a lie. And the whole city was there. And then Richard Pryor comes out and does the worst impersonation of a general I've ever seen.
General Patton. It looked like he was trying to imitate General Patton.
The black General Patton. Ah, here you go. Show our appreciation. And then he touched it. And I was like, does he not know what kryptonite looks like? That's what I was thinking the whole time. I was like,
well, remember Lex threw him inside the swimming pool with the kryptonite.
Yeah.
So he knows what kryptonite looks like.
Yeah, but he just held it like, thanks.
But it doesn't even look like kryptonite, though. It's generic.
It's it's green. I would be like, uh-oh, get that away from me.
Me too. But it doesn't even look like kryptonite. Even whenever they show you the results, it's like a not, it's a 1% chance of 1%, and then he changes it up with the nicotine and Camel cigarettes. But what did you think about the whole entire thing on top of the building where you have him meeting up with everybody and Gus is over there talking about Superman? Look, it was not my fault. I'm sorry this happened. I was not counting on Superman being there. He came in. I'm telling you, man. I'm telling you. There was a tornado. He went on ahead, went to the bottom of the tornado, and then after that, he flipped the tornado upside down. And then he went on. He ended up drying out the. He uses ice breath for this and that. And he goes, "Look, man, I am so sorry." And at first, you know, they're actually happy with the way the results were with Gus.
Yeah.
Up until Gus ran his mouth and told them about the stuff that was happening on the news.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, I thought I was watching a Richard Pryor special. Superman. I forgot it was a movie. I was like, ooh, this is a good special. All right.
And he's putting the skis on as he's telling.
Yeah, I think he forgot about the script. He's like, I'm just going to do whatever. But I actually saw it as like a kid playing Superman. Then you see that? He's like, oh, and then he put the cape on. And he's like snapping. And he's like, oh, then he went up and down. And then he's over here. Richard Pryor stole that scene from them. And that's how bad of a villain this guy is. Like, he didn't have the charisma to take the scene back from Richard Pryor.
No.
Because I'm paying attention to Richard Pryor over there doing some weird thing in the background, putting skis on for no reason at all. And he got a pink cape on and he's talking to himself. And I'm like, oh, what's going on over there?
You know what's bad though is Lori Ellie is the Webster's mistress.
Yeah.
Is having a conversation with Richard and saying, yeah, I remember hearing about that with the being about the kryptonite and stuff. So she's going back and forth with him a little bit with Gordon. While Webster's over there just listening to his nonsense, and then you have Vera who's over there just ignoring Richard as a babbling idiot, and then Richard accidentally skis off the building.
That is the craziest thing I ever seen, and I've seen a lot of movies. How do you ski off a building, and then you're skiing on the side of the building in a pink cape, and then you just happen to land perfectly on the ground? I was waiting for Superman to come and help him.
But also, too, though, that's the only building that has snow.
Yeah, but I know. I'm like, Superman, don't hear that man screaming off the building.
He's in love with Lana. He's over in Smallville right now.
Dang, man. Come on.
And we're going to talk about all this. We're going to talk about...
That man could have died on and Superman out there trying to get some from Lana. See? That's his real kryptonite, women.
But you see, though, that's what happens when you you go on ahead, you mix... Camel cigarettes with kryptonite, with 1% kryptonite, trying to pretend it's something. This is like making crystal meth and mixing it with sheetrock.
Oh, dang. That's a couple. Okay. That makes sense now. Go ahead.
But yeah, now Lana convinces Superman to appear at Ricky's birthday party. She calls up Clark, says, hey, Clark, look, Ricky did something stupid. I'm not saying she didn't say that, but I'm saying that he told everyone after you gave him the autograph from Superman that Superman was going to come to his birthday party. So Clark, the good guy that he is, goes, well, tell Ricky that Superman will be there. So now all of Smallville turns out because of Ricky. And they're having a celebration where the local mayor gives Superman the honorable key to the city. Gus and Vera, disguised as the United States Army officers, show up during the ceremony to honor Superman for saving the chemical plant earlier. They give Superman the man-made kryptonite as a gift and are dismayed to see that it appears to have no immediate effect on him. However, the compound begins to produce symptoms. After the celebration, Superman goes through a descent into darkness as he becomes selfish, focusing on his lust for Lana, which causes him to delay rescuing a truck driver from his jackknife rig. Once again, you know where I'm going with it, Tamika. Once again, because of a
woman. Yeah. That's the real kryptonite, my friend.
But yeah, I want to piggyback off of something that you said, though. That is the worst General Patton impression that I ever heard of. And then you see these two people that don't even look like Army officials at all. Maybe Vera might be the one that actually looks like it little bit.
Yeah.
Superman, I just want to give you this as my token of my appreciation for everything that you do for us. Here's some green shit that I made up in the lab. But
yeah, that's what I was like. He's holding it and he's like, gee, thanks. And then he sits down.
He goes, it's nice. And then Gus is like, yeah, okay.
Yeah. It's like boss, it didn't do anything to him. But now that you, I don't know how I missed that whole thing, but now that you tell me that it has nicotine in it, I can see the descent. It's almost like he has nicotine in him. Like, I don't know if it was showing some kind of message of how bad nicotine is for the body. But because that's how I'm seeing it now.
Bring up a good point, though. Yeah. Because remember, Lana tells Superman, you want coffee? Decaf, right? Nicotine is a form of caffeine as well. So I'm like, okay, so I'm actually seeing a pattern here with the nicotine and also with the coffee. So he didn't even have a chance to even have coffee with Lana. I believe if he went on ahead and had the coffee, maybe the nicotine wouldn't have been so bad. Maybe, I don't know. That's just me going to a little bit of a science with it, but I don't know.
The more I see all these Superman movies, the more impressed I am with Christopher Reeve's acting abilities.
He's able to do something with the script.
He brings so many layers to Superman, and he makes it so deep. Like, he's Clark one minute, and then he's Superman. And then here, you really see like some deep Shakespearean act. I'm putting that in there. It's no Shakespearean, but I like to say that. You see some deep Shakespearean acting, like Macbeth shit or something. Like when Lana was like, oh, you know, the bridge is about to collapse and this truck is going to fall down into the lake or whatever. He had very pervy vibes and it was very creepy. And I felt disgusted.
And also too, okay, so I want to talk about Richard Pryor one more time with the whole army thing, too.
Of course you do.
Because he goes, you're sitting down on your no good teaster watching the Super Bowl. He's talking a bunch of ragtime to these people, and the people are just eating it. It's just sitting there like, okay, dude, whatever.
Yeah.
But going back over to the thing with Lana now, though, too, the lighting in her house is totally different from what we see the first time with Clark. Mm-hmm. It's kind of dimmed. It kind of has that whole entire thing of how Superman is feeling. Mm-hmm. It has that little bit of darkness within the house itself that I never noticed before until I started watching it for the review.
Yeah.
I'm like, okay, this actually, to me, describes how Superman is feeling at this moment. And then he gets over to where the rig is and he goes, okay, so what seems to be the problem? We already did everything. Oh, okay.
Yeah, he's like, well, nothing now. And was somebody in that truck?
Yeah, they got everybody out. You can see them taking everybody out on top of the bridge. Oh, then you can see.
Goodness. I was like, man, the truck died. The truck fell, and the man died, and Superman missed it. But I'm glad you said they got him.
They got him up over there before Superman even came.
Because you wanted to get laid. You done killed a man.
But that's not the first time, though, that he did something like this. Superman 2.
But John, it's a difference. Like, he willingly did it. You know, he was like, yes, I'm giving my powers away so I be the woman I love. This is lust. This is lusty, Superman. You know, like, yo, what's up? And he's on the couch with her. He's leaning closer to her. And he's like, should you be going? He's like, for what? You know, it's time.
It's okay. I'll get there on time. I always do.
Yeah. You want to go to the bedroom? You know, I thought they were going to come out later. And
Mickey's also taking a nap, so.
Yeah. After
he's also, he goes, this man, Ricky is really knocked out. This is his, he was so tired from the parade and everything. Yeah. And then Superman's like, oh, okay. So he's knocked down, huh? Okay.
Yeah. Yeah. He's knocked out. You want to go in?
Yeah. You know, there's a banner right over there. You know?
You know, I'm Superman.
I'm Superman.
Yeah, I can see some super dick draws. Yeah, I can go. I want to go in the back, get some of this Superman.
Trust me, I'm faster than a speeding bullet. You wouldn't even know. Damn! Flying back up. All you think of is like the washing machine or something, and then you have.
Think you should go.
Right.
It was
so Superman gets friend zoned, but Clark doesn't. So that's something I like.
That was,
and I want to talk about that though too. Like, Lana loves Clark for who he is.
Yes,
especially when he saves Ricky from the lawnmower, from the tractors and stuff like that. We forgot to talk about that scene.
Oh my god, John! Oh my god, I was on the edge of the couch. I was like, oh my god, is he gonna make it? And then I thought. So they're in the cornfields, and you know how cornfields are really tall, and the tractors have to go and weed the corn and whatever they do. Mm-hmm. Like, how can you tell if somebody just gonna pass out in the fields and they run over them?
There's no way of knowing.
That is so scary.
It really is. And then he's like, "Well, where's Archie? I don't know if that's the dog's name, but I was like,
okay, yeah,
I found him. He's right here in the store." Oh, okay. But yeah. The thing that I like about Lana is she likes Clark for who he is, not because he's in. Lois likes not. She doesn't like Superman. Clark.
Yeah.
She loves Superman, not Clark. Mm-hmm. So it's like the two egos of the two of them is like, well, we can either be one or the other, but we can't be both.
True.
So that was just something I was just thinking about after rewatching this again. Yeah.
He can't really find a woman that can accept both parts of him. They either
want one or
the other.
If anyone could, I think it would be Lana.
I think he ruined that with that creepy Superman vibe.
Well, he doesn't know that he's Superman. That's the thing.
Well, oh, okay, yeah. But when she finds out and she's like, oh, you're almost like me on the couch with your creepy vibes. Like, is she going to accept Superman, Clark?
Yeah, he was going through a difficult time. I don't know.
He was going through a difficult time. He looked like he smoked 8 packs a day.
He looked like a divorced dad that was going through some shit.
And the makeup they put on. I like the choice that they have. They have to show the differences in his appearance. Like, they put dark shadow over his eyes, like some old school villain. Gave him some eyeshadow and made him look like he didn't shave. And like, hey, what's up, Superman girl? I'm like, oh, God. I don't know. I just think Chris Reeve's acting was genius. And I'm just thinking about the documentary he was in, I'm really sad that he didn't really get his just due, because he was always typecast as Superman, and he did all of these movies and he did all these dramatic roles. But I am glad that I could see bits and pieces of that in Superman, like especially when he went dark Superman, you can see the dramatic roles that he was good at playing. Like, he's just a great actor. That's all I got to say.
He is. I really like him. And matter of fact, he was actually in a horror movie called Village of the Damned.
Oh, that's right.
Yeah.
with
him and Chrissy Alley. Yeah.
Can you imagine how frustrating that is? I'm going to take 1 minute to talk about it. You imagine how frustrating that is? He's like, I'm Christopher Reeves. I'm more than Superman. I can do X, Y, Z. And they're like, what are you talking about? You're Superman. And he's like, no, I'm a serious actor. This is my craft. I'm serious about it. He played like these period piece movies and all this other stuff, and they bombed. And he's like, oh, I got so frustrated. I'm stuck as Superman. You know, like, like how
the perfect example for that would be the star of Harry Potter.
Yes, but he fought really hard to kind of break through. Like he's breaking through those roles. And Robert Downey Jr., well, it's a difference because he did a lot of roles before Iron Man. But we see him as Iron Man, but also now with the whole Doomsday thing, people are kind of like, oh, no, I can see him as
Doomsday like whenever evil, he's
Doomsday, but he's supposed to be Iron Man. But I trust RDJ because he's a great actor and he can make you forget about that whole Iron Man thing for a minute.
This is Christopher Reeves tries to make us forget about, you know, he was Superman, even though he's been trying to not be typecast, but we ended up typecasting him just as the studios also typecast him. Because I was guilty of that as a kid. I was like, that's my Superman.
Boy, I mean, you were a kid. I mean, like the adults. And it was a different time. Like, this is the first, that was probably the first big superhero movie at that time.
Mm-hmm.
So it was. Him trying to break out of the Superman roles to do something else, something serious, and people didn't really accept that. That had to be really frustrating as an actor.
It is. I mean, even Daniel Craig doesn't want to be typecast as James Bond either.
I get it now. Even though I was against him when he first came out, but then I got used to him 8 movies later, and then he's talking about he walking away. I'm like, where are you going, Daniel? And then I was like, oh, I'm sorry. You know, I had to check myself because I get so attached.
Right. And that's the thing. We get attached to these actors and we end up typecasting them just as the studios also typecast them. Like
Chris Evans as Captain America. It's like he's always Captain America. And then you see him in Knives Out.
Knives Out. Yeah.
And I'm like, oh, Captain America and the language. Like I had to I was like, no, this is Christopher Evans playing a role. So frustrating. Okay, we can go on with the movie. I just wanted to say that looking at his documentary, just hearing how frustrated he was, you know, through his wife and his kids, just talking about he was very frustrated. He couldn't really break out of the Superman role, and he was typecast every time, and every movie he did bombed. Even when he was doing serious roles, trying to be a villain, he was trying to grow as an actor. But everybody was like, oh, no, you're just Superman. Like, I can see how frustrating that could be.
That's same here. All right. So with Superman distracted, Webster's further his plans by controlling the world's oil supply, ordering Gorman to direct all the tankers to the middle of the Atlantic Ocean and having them sit there until further notice. Gorman moans that Ross gets his own way all the time and that he feels unappreciated. He then gives Webster a series of cruelty-drawn blueprints for a supercomputer. Ross makes a deal with Gorman, agreeing to build his supercomputer in return for sorting out the oil tankers. However, the captain of one tanker ignores the computer's instructions, electing to process the Metropolis as agreed. Loriella puts herself in danger atop of the Statue of Liberty to be rescued by Superman, whom she easily seduces sexually. She then convinces him to quit pro to do her bidding, and he does do by ripping open the hull of the independent oil tanker, causing the contents to spill out into the sea. This is something that where we have Gordon basically telling Webster, look, man, I feel unappreciated here and stuff like that. I'm just going to go. I don't feel like that we're in this agreement anymore or anything. And he tries to blackmail Webster. And then also, too, you also have Webster blackmailing him. He goes, look, man, you can't blackmail me with jail anymore because I'm not scared of jail.
Mm-hmm.
And at this point, I bet Gordon's stack of money.
Mm-hmm.
Get him a really good lawyer to the point where Webster's going to be basically naming Webster Dictionary. because I'm just saying, like, I bet Gordon has a stack of money now to where he can afford himself a good lawyer, to where he doesn't have to worry about being in jail and he doesn't have any reason to be threatened by it.
Yeah.
But Gordon also knows that he needs him if he wants a supercomputer too. So therefore it swings his way. And so now we have that whole entire thing with the oil tanker. And I like how that gets played out where, okay, the oil tanker is like, look, I'm not going to do this. I'm not going to jeopardize my own job or this man. So now he has to try and force the hand. Roger Rambo says, both my aunts worked on the sock kinds in the 80s. They originally planned to make Superman 4 with Patrick Duffy replacing Reeve as Superman. Dudley Moore as Mr. and Frank, okay, as Brainiac. Yeah, huh. I remember hearing about the fact that they were going to use Brainiac for this one.
Oh, cool.
And that's actually supposed to be the conflict between, and correct me if I'm wrong, Roger, isn't that supposed to be like the conflict between Clark and the evil Clark is like a Brainiac version of him? That's what I was thinking they were going to originally use, but I could be wrong on that.
Wow. Okay, cool. I like it.
But instead, we get just Clark versus Superman, and that's all.
That in itself was deep.
Yeah.
That was still deep. But yeah, I want to talk about Laureline. I'm going to call her Laureline because I like the way that sounds better. But anyway, okay. Laureline, she's like in her victim nightgown on top of the Statue of Liberty. This is like, oh, Superman, it's you. And I'm like, no, this is dark Superman. He's like, listen, you think I'm going to save you? I'm not. I was like, damn, Superman. Jesus.
He's over there in a Victoria's Secret's nightgown that she just got off of page 60.
You come in with a major attitude. Like, my feet hurt. I'm tired. I'm like, damn, bro.
He's been waiting on that Statue of Liberty since 1 o'clock that afternoon, and he won't even try to save her.
I was like, oh my God. And, you know, and then she's like talking to him and he snatches her up. He's like, yeah. I'm like, oh my God, who is this? This dark Superman. That's why my headline said dark Superman is a menace. He is a menace. Okay. And then John didn't even prepare me, y'all, for like dark Superman. He just told me to watch this movie, and I was like, oh, okay, it's like the Superman 2-in-1. I was like, oh my God, who is this? And then he comes back after he spills the oil, and she's like, oh, Superman, it's you again. And she's on the bed, and she's like, hey, so you want to? He's like, yeah, let's do this. And I'm like, wait a minute. How did she have sex with Superman? And Lois couldn't even have sex with Superman. She had to get him without his powers.
Right.
And then you got this lady. I mean, how was she okay? Like, I just want to know the physics of this whole thing. Like, how was she okay after having sex with Superman? Like, how could she?
Roger Rambo says, well,
I mean, it's dark Superman, so he wasn't gentle.
He wasn't. He was far from gentle.
She should have been dead.
That bed is going to, I'm going to tell you this, that bed is going to be up bringing some holes inside that wall. She should have been dead. And Webster's going to be pissed.
And he could have broken her bones. That's all I'm saying. Okay, sorry. Go ahead, Roger.
Well, the reason the comedy in Richard Pryor was injected into Superman 3 was because Warner feared Superman turning evil would be too frightening for kids and wouldn't get a PG rating.
Interesting. Okay, I can see that. Same. Yeah. I mean, the sex was okay, but...
I don't know. I don't think that the woman would say that it was okay.
Him almost raping Lana was okay.
Right? This woman was probably in a coma after a while, though, because her head probably went through the backboard.
I did not. John, you did not prepare me. And I was like, oh, what is he about?
I'll be real. I forgot about those two scenes.
And she was like taking it slow. Like, I'm going to seduce him, Superman. Like, I don't got time for this seducing stuff. My feet hurt. I'm tired of being Superman. I want to get laid. Here, lay down. And I'm like, oh my God. I was not prepared for dark Superman like that.
Right.
Just shocked.
But now we have...
I was like shocked and turned on at the same time.
But yeah, meanwhile, Superman... His depression with drinking with a drinking binge, but is eventually overcome by guilt and undergoes nervous breakdown after Ricky calls out to him, urging him to fight against his descent into evil after nearly crash landing in a junkyard. Mm-hmm. Superman splits into two personas, the evil selfish one, corrupted Superman, and the moral righteous Clark Kent. They engage in an epic battle across the junkyard with the evil Superman repeatedly trying and failing to kill Clark. By crushing him into an industrial equipment, they are both seemingly matched as evil Superman, despite his powers becomes more physically weakened after using them, while Clark still has a Superman strength, but none of Superman's powers of light or heat vision. So, what I like about this is, you know, you have, he's over in the bar. It's a Monday. He's just, and he's over there flicking peanuts at the bar, melting the glass, the mirror. And then here comes Ricky. Hey, Superman, it's okay. Look, you're just in a slump. That's all you are. You're in a slump. You're going to get out of it. It's going to be okay. Mm. And he's flying. And then next thing you know, he goes into the junkyard because his consciousness is actually playing into that thing that Ricky is saying and pulling. And then that's where he pulls out that whole entire persona of the two different versions of him. But the junkyard scene is always my favorite scene. Yes, it can be cheesy and stuff like that. But at the same time, I really am still enticed with it. I still love that scene.
That was a good scene. It was deep. Like you said, he was calling out to him, Superman, you can do it. You can do it. And like, I did not expect it to be that deep, John. Like, it tore him apart. And I'm like, this man is fighting with his own self. It's like two of his, like, both alter egos are clashing. You know, and right. I'm curious for Kryptonian.
Kryptonians, or
for Kryptonian, like, is that they're genetic? Like, how, when something is so traumatic to them, do they split apart, or is that just?
I think it's the whole. I think this is just dealing with Clark.
Okay,
I think one part of Clark is like, I want to have a normal life. I want to have some normalcy to where I'm not having to sacrifice a relationship to go save somebody. Yeah. While the other part of him is pulling out the fact that I got to go. I got to go now. I have to help someone. Mm. So I think it's the two of them clashing together, pulling on him because there's some normalcy he wants. But at the same time, he knows he can't have that normalcy.
Mm. Yep. That's deep. That's exactly what I saw. And I thought the evil Superman was going to win. But, you know, Clark never gave up. He was like, no. You know, this is who we are, and we just have to be one.
Right, you know, and we are who we are. His
demons, in a way. You know, right. It was really, really powerful.
And I like the fact, too, that there's a normalization with Clark with this fight. Yes, he still has some superhuman strength, but at the same time, he doesn't have the heat blast. He doesn't have any of that other stuff.
Yes.
He's using his own strength to take down his super self.
Yes.
So that's what I like about this. It kind of humanizes him in a sense. Yes. Those struggles.
Exactly. Yes. Yes. And he was on nicotine. So he was like fighting his inner demons. And the little boy was like his sponsor. Like, hey, put that drink down. You don't need that. Yeah. Like, Superman is
a sponsor.
He needs to go to NA or AA or something. I mean, I guess that was like that whole junkyard scene was like his AA, NA, and one.
Right.
And
but then
like,
we also have Lana, who is talking to, you know, talking to the douchebag, Brad.
Brad.
And he doesn't even talk about the fact that he got fired. He doesn't talk about anything. He just wants to be with Lana. Mm-hmm. Lana goes on ahead and goes, I know what to do. And you're thinking that she's going to call Clark. But instead, what does she do? She goes on ahead and calls for a train ticket to go to Metropolis. So
I'm going to do. I'm going to get out of here.
Because there's nothing for them in Kansas anymore. Mm. And Clark is in Metropolis. He can basically protect her, is what she's looking at.
Mm.
And give her a life that she never had outside of that small town life.
Wow. Lana is a G. I know what I'm going to do. I'm not dealing with this. I'm gonna go. Lana don't play, man.
She ain't gonna argue with you.
I'm just gonna pat my pants and leave.
Exactly.
Wow.
So now we have Superman then goes to the apartment penthouse of Webster to confront him, only to find a video message that they are hiding out in the Grand Canyon, the location where Gus Gorman's supercomputer has been built after riding on mules for a cast bridge. Webster, Vera, and Laura Lee take air bikes down to the Grand Canyon floor. And then Gorman, who decides to ride down by his own donkey, Webster, Vera, and Laura Lee arrive at a large cave where the supercomputer is and set out to await Superman's arrival.
Hmm.
Then, after defending himself from numerous ground-to-air rockets and an MX-guided missiles, Superman confronts Webster, Vera, and Laura Lonnie, and is forced into a battle with Gorman's ultimate computer, which severely weakens him with kryptonite ray. Gorman, guilt-ridden and horrified by the prospect of going down in history as the man who killed Superman, destroys the ray with a firefighter's axe, whereupon Superman flees. The living computer becomes self-aware and begins to defend itself against Gorman's attempt to disable it, draining power and electrical towers, causing a massive blackout across the North American continent. So, what did you think of the whole fact that, you know, they had the supercomputer down in this Grand Canyon? And I thought it was pretty cool that they actually did this.
Mm-hmm.
And, you know, they have the supercomputer that Gordon wants. They're flying down. They're actually going in this little air balloon thing, one of the bicycles down there, like a very, I think it looks pretty cool, like a comic strip. But what did you think of this whole entire setup?
Okay, so Superman, I thought it was kind of cool, and I'm gonna tell you why. Superman flies down, and then Laura, I'm called Laura Lynn, her name isn't that, but she's like, "Oh, hey, honey." He's like, "I don't know you, lady." She's like, "Oh, but what about the other night? That guy's gone. I'm Superman again." She's like, "I'm like, that's cold, man. That's cold. He was only one night stand. Shut up, girl. I'm here to save the world." She's like, "Oh, that night. That was cold." Okay.
But it was.
Yes, but I thought that it was kind of hokey. Because when they first shot out whatever that was, he's like, "Oh, Superman's in a bubble." And I'm like, "A plastic bubble?" He's like, "Eh, eh." I'm like, I thought him throwing the kite of the S on the guy, the cellophane, was bad.
And nope, they decided to go an extra mile with this one.
It's like, what the hell?
You're killing him.
It looked like he was in a beach ball. You're killing him. I was like, what the hell is going on? Oh, my God. And then Gus is like, "No, I can't. I stop him." And we got like, what, shoestring? I don't know. He's like tying something. And then, I can understand the comic relief. I was like, this is just ridiculous.
Yeah, he ends up falling the screw with the key on it.
But the way he got down, John, it was like, was he using floss?
And I don't know.
He's like, "Wee!" Like zip lines down somewhere. I'm like, where did you get that? This man always has floss on him or whatever that is.
Right. Like he was prepared for anything.
Oh my gosh. But yeah, I understand him wanting to take the narrative back. Like, no, you guys are using my genius for evil intent, and I thought I was just helping. I mean, yeah, he was greedy too, but he didn't want to be known as person.
He didn't think it was gonna be a trap for Superman.
Yeah,
right.
Yeah, he's like, "I gotta stop this, I gotta do something." But the way you were just reading how the computer became self-aware, I'm like, oh my gosh, this is like AI.
Mm-hmm. This ChatGPT taking over.
Chat It's the people that run it. Chat is not all that bad. But it was, oh my gosh, John. It's like this movie is the precursor to what we're going through now. It's so bizarre. Mm-hmm. I feel like everybody needs to watch Superman 3 and you'll be blown away like we are. It's like, oh my gosh.
The timing of it and everything. Yeah. It's just unbelievable. Like, yeah, this can be a bad movie, but at the same time, it has some deep cuts to it.
I don't consider this a bad movie anymore. I just consider it hokey and silly.
Right.
Yeah, it's like deep, you know?
Right. Now that we're reviewing it, it's not as dumb as we make it out to be or anything. There's some deep layers to it.
Yeah.
Looking it back on this. But, you know, I want to go into the whole entire thing with the rockets and stuff like that, too. Yes. Okay. With Webster, I thought that was pretty cool. Like I said, it kind of looked like a video game, kind of.
Yes.
Where I wanted to go into Pizza Hut and play that video game with Superman. Which I did a price check on eBay. It's $3,000. But so
got Superman at home. So, I'm sure you can get like we got PS5, right? Like, don't they have PS5. I know you probably can't get that original game, but maybe there's like some game similar.
Bought a PS2 video game of Superman Returns, and that game sucked.
Oh, man.
Yeah, that game sucked. I ended up bringing it into GameStop and I got like $10 for it.
Of course you did.
But anyways.
Okay.
But now we get into this other thing with, and I also agree with you with some of the stuff was kind of hokey and stuff like that with him, the beach ball and stuff. But then it turns up an extra notch. It gets turned up an extra notch now.
Okay.
You know how?
Tell them, John.
Ross and L'Oreal escape from the control room, but Vera is pulled into the computer and forced to be transformed into a cyborg. And powered by the supercomputer, Vera attacks her brother and Lori with beams of energy, then immobilizes them. Superman returns to the battle with a canister of the ballistic acid from the chemical plant he saved earlier. Like, that was even close by. After battling the living computers, which attacks him with bolts of electricity and energy rays, the intense heat emitted by the machines causes the small canister acid to turn violent and eventually destroying the supercomputer and saving everyone. Superman flies away with Gus, leaving Webster and his cronies behind to deal with the authorities. After dropping Gus off a coal mine, where he gives him a job reference, which Gus declines and slips away to restart his life elsewhere, Superman returns to Metropolis and reunites with Lana Lang, who has relocated to the big city with her son Ricky and found employment as Perry White's new secretary. Lois Lane also returns from her vacation, which she has been away throughout the entire movie, and immediately shows signs of jealousy when she meets Lana for the very first time. It seems like that with Vera, it just seemed like it was too quick on how Superman finishes her off. Like, he takes that ray that beamed up Webster,
yeah,
beams up L'Oreal, and he just takes his hands and just puts it back on her, and she just, I laughed my ass off on how Vera just falls. Like, she was like supposed to be the final boss, but she's not the final boss. The final boss is this giant computer.
Yeah, listen, they had to wrap up the movie. Like, zap, okay, gotta fight this computer. The way she transformed, it really freaked me out. It was like I was watching some horror movie. My computer sucked her in, and all of a sudden these parts just attached to her face. I think it's just the way it's like pink, 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 pink.
I thought it was cool, though. Like, for it to be a horror movie.
And scary. And I was like, Lord, Jesus. And then she's like, I'm a cyborg. And then she's like shooting laser beams out her fingernail, her cyborg fingernail. Mm-hmm. She's blasting Laura Lynn on the cliff, and I'm like, oh my god, this is terrible.
Because remember, she had beef with L'Oreal throughout this whole entire film, so she was like the first one to actually do something to her.
Yeah, that was crazy. It actually looked like some Star Trek stuff.
It did. It looked like a combination of Star Trek and a sci-fi movie.
Yeah.
And then whenever the computer scans Superman for any weapons, it doesn't recognize the fact that this acid is dangerous.
Yeah, like all the wires start coming out and just choking him and pulling him back in. And I'm like, what are you doing? He's like, I'm just going to open this acid. I'm like, shouldn't you just like him?
You know, you can actually destroy it, let it swallow you in, and then just destroy it from the inside.
That nicotine kind of delayed some stuff.
Yeah, I see that.
I mean,
the nicotine will do it to you.
Picked up the acid and just like, it was like the acid just reacted and shot out. Yeah, the continuity stuff.
There's too much science in this. Like,
yeah, they're like, we're just going to focus on the science. We're not going to have Superman to pick up the acid and just push it on the, splat it on the computer. We're just going to have it sit there and then it just like bubbles up and it's science.
But, okay. Then we get Gus and him. And at first I'm like, what the hell do they do to, I mean, are they still in the cave? What's going on? But, they just, he goes, well, they have to deal with the police now. How? They're in the cave.
Not my problem. Right?
But he takes Gus and puts him in where this coal mine is, and he winds up having this huge-ass diamond that he finds and, and crushes the rocks and has it open. And he goes, how do you guys feel about hiring my good friend Gus here? He's good at computers. And he's like, okay, that's not a bad idea. Superman, we'll hire. And he goes, so how about it, sir? How about Gus? He goes, well, I don't think so.
Like, I had enough of computers.
I don't blame the guy. I wouldn't want, like, I get the fact that, like, it's like, okay, dude, I understand where you're coming from. You don't want to deal with the computers.
Yeah.
Anymore.
But now you're out of a job. So I'm like,
right. Now you're back to square one trying to find a job all over again.
I would just took that job with the computers.
Here's my thing. I think Gus is okay. You know how I know that?
Well, how?
I think that his money's not frozen. He's not going to jail. Now, as far as the rich asshole and everything, his accounts are froze. But then again, I'm going way too deep with this.
Might as well.
Then again, all that money that Gus is tied up to is also tied up to them. So is his accounts froze or is it not froze?
Yeah. Interesting.
And so, he's basically poor. Yeah, he's free, but at what cost?
It's just interesting. Superman didn't like take him to the police station, all of them. Because, I mean, Gus was involved in some criminal activity, even though he saved him at the end.
Come on, you're talking about someone that actually hacked ATM machines and spitting out money.
Yes. Which that guy was lucky, by the way, in that scene.
Yeah.
Like, everybody just kept pouring out.
I think the reason why Superman was like, you know what? You saved my life. I could see some good in you. And you just got tangled up with the wrong people.
Okay.
And that money just corrupted you into who they are.
Hmm.
So I think that's what it was. I think it was the whole fact that he saw something good in Gus. It's just that he was with the wrong crowd.
Now, Dark Superman would have just took him to the police station and left him in the cave. See, I don't got time for this.
What it would do is use the laser eyes and make the whole entire avalanche cave in on them.
That's true. Dark Superman would have just killed them all.
And destroy the supercomputer, and that'll be the end of it.
Yeah, and then go
Go back to the bar, and
I'm sick of this.
Right?
I need a whole series of Dark Superman.
But so now, how do you feel about the fact that, you know, Lana's now working at the newspaper thing now for Metropolis? And then you have Lois who comes back, and Lois is jealous of Lana.
I think Lois was kind of jealous, and then Lana had to flash her diamond ring in her face. She's like, oh yeah, Clark got this for me. She's like, oh. Like,
first of all, I'd be like, on our salary? How does he afford a diamond ring like that?
That just tells you, like, even though he wiped her memory, she still feels something for him.
Mm-hmm.
Like, how many times did he have to wipe her memory? He, like, did it only once from what I remember. Like, he, yeah.
He just did it once.
Yeah, there's still something between them. But there's an interesting conflict or dynamic now, because now there's Laura. There's this other woman now that he's in love with, and he's trying to move on from Lois, and mm-hmm. Lois has these feelings that are coming up, so he's caught in between two women now. I think it's really interesting.
Yeah. It's a shame that the fourth one didn't concentrate on that much.
I would have started it's like with
this
that.
One never even happened, because now it's Perry's daughter that comes into the whole entire mix in the fourth one.
Nah, I would have started with that. That would have been good to, like, expand upon that.
You have,
like,
a small town girl in this city life that she's not used to trying to fit in, while you're also taking away Lois's love interest.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, I would have had them two going at it for a story or whatever. And he's like, girl, stop fighting. And then they somehow find out he's Superman. And then it's like, oh, no, I love you. It's like, which one do I choose? Oh, no. And that's where he can split into Dark Superman and be like, there, take her. And then I'll go where? This one.
Oh, and then we also. So this is like the finale right here.
Okay, yeah.
In the final scene during the lunch break, his lunch break, Clark as Superman flies to Italy to correct the final problem, which we didn't cover. We forgot about this, where when he was evil Superman.
Yes.
Dark Superman, he ends up blowing the torch out at the Olympics. He also winds up destroying the oil tanker. Then he winds up, let's see, what else does he do? He also
he corrects the Leaning Tower of Pisa.
Yep.
He makes it, he corrects
straight.
It. Yeah, straight. And then the guy that's selling the souvenirs that are leaning, he's like, what the? Darn it, Superman!
And then he's got it crooked again after this man went on ahead and recorrected how it is, which is straight.
Yeah.
Now he has to go back and make a whole new batch of it being leaning again, of the Leaning Tower.
Come and make it lean again. He's like, I'm correcting all my mistakes. Have a nice day. He's like, rah!
He just waves. Even the evil Superman waves to the after all the chaos.
By the way, he blew out that torch like an asshole. He's like, I'm bored.
And he's like,
nah, next. I'm like, dang, you evil. That's the Olympic torch, man. He's like, that ain't right. Boring me. Okay, I'm going to go to the bar again.
And after that, we get the pizza guy, the guy who winds up taking the souvenirs and destroying the whole entire deal. With his broom.
I corrected it, sir.
But even after we always get that sequence of Superman flying out, and you don't even get the Superman theme like we normally do.
Yeah, that's true. Yeah, I know.
It doesn't have that epicness of the first two scores. So... yeah, now that we got rid of it, stripped away the nostalgia.
Okay.
What do you give this? You went from an NA to what?
I'll give it a 7. 7.5 at least. It wasn't horrible for me as an adult watching it. I saw so many deep themes into it. As 7.5.
Okay. I'm gonna stick to my 7. Matter of fact, I might actually stick to my 7.5.
Cool.
Because of the fact that, you know, do I want to give it an 8? I'll give it an 8.
Oh, okay.
Probably. Mm-hmm. Because of how deep the movie is, and at that time, it was new in the 80s. It was something that hasn't been done or anything like that either, in a Superman kind of way or anything either. So I'll give it like an 8.
Okay. Wow, that's good.
So I bumped it up a little bit.
Yeah.
But I know people are not going to like this movie still, but from my perspective, with the deep layers that we discussed, I'm like, this is not as bad as I thought it was.
I mean, at the time, it was bad.
Yeah.
Because people are like, what is this crap?
Well, even on Rotten Tomatoes, it's not so good. Not on Rotten Tomatoes.
Yeah.
It's got a 29% with a 23% for the popcorn meter.
Wow.
Yeah.
See, this new Superman movie needs to go back to Dark Superman. I need to see Dark Superman one more time.
But yeah, that's going to be it as far as this episode goes. But guys, cool. We're going to be back again for Superman 4 sometime next week, probably. But yeah, that's going to be it as far as this goes. Don't forget to smash that like button, subscribe button, and all that other good stuff here at Movie Lovers Unite. And we'll catch you guys back on the next one.
Do you know
it's
yet? Oh my god.
But anyways, guys, that's gonna be it. I hope everyone enjoyed our review for the first three films of Superman. We'll be back again for the fourth one, so always until next time, bye bye.
When your company earns unlimited 2% cash back on all purchases with Capital One, that's serious business. So Steven at SandCloud got a serious business card, the Spark Cash Plus card from Capital One.
We used our 2% cash back to help build our retail presence.
Savvy, Steven.
And we get big purchasing power, so our business can spend more and earn more.
The Spark Cash Plus card from Capital One. What's in your wallet?
Terms and conditions apply. Find out more at CapitalOne.com/SparkCashPlus.
In Indiana, summer means more than sunshine. It's hiking miles and miles of trails to magnificent views and cruising through caves on underground river rides. It's spending the night in a floating cabin and scuba diving into your next big adventure. It's riding a horse and buggy through historic towns and camping with elephants at a wildlife park. It's anything but ordinary. Plan your trip at inindiana.com/summer.